Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players, by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry, and we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description.
Today we are joined by Joelle, who is the founder of More Than a Swing, MTAS, a Singapore-based badminton academy, which, as its name suggests, focuses beyond the technical skills of a player. Leveraging life coaching tools such as the 12 archetypes, he believes that dispositions coupled with our life experiences can have a profound impact on the way we approach a game. With a background in youth work and coaching, his coaching approach helps learners untangle complex emotions and find lightness, giving them an edge in and out of their game. Together with Joelle is Ian, founder of Curin Organics, whose vision in life is in hiring, training, and empowering people of all abilities. E-commerce startup, which manufactures soaps and detergents out of Brisbane, Australia, believes that everyday commodities can be better for people and the planet. He first joined More Than a Swing as a learner and later joined the team as a valued staff member to support the organization's digital efforts.
If I go to a consultant with a question, I expect an answer. But you go to a coach with a question, the coach may ask you even more questions and they may help you to come into realization of what works for you. I will add that for a coach, we don't only ask questions, but we co-create solutions. Why we believe in this is that if I give you a solution to how I would deal with the situation that fits my personality and my circumstances and my upbringing, I already have it in my body and my personality to take on that solution, but it may not be the same for you. So when we co-create a solution, we put the ball back into the client's court, right? And we ask, how would you create this result? How would you usually deal with this? And what would work for you? And what doesn't work for you? And again, it's just by asking questions so that we can shape and create that solution together.
Welcome onto the podcast, Joelle and Ian.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Henry and Jeff.
Very happy to have you on. So before we dive deep into the podcast, I'm sure our audience would love to know how you both met, as badminton and designer detergents and hand soaps are quite different. So, yeah, let's start with you, Ian.
Sure. I think I've known Joelle for more than a decade now. We met ages ago, and it was in a church setting that we met. And it was interesting because we had parallel friends at church, but it was only, I think, maybe 5-6 years in that we got really connected. And I always knew that Joelle played badminton, and we used to drive up to Malaysia on weekday nights to play badminton just across the border. And it was only in the second half of that friendship where we got to know each other better. And I got to experience badminton coaching from Joelle when I decided that I wanted to bring my game to the next level. And I think that life coaching element that Joelle brought in was something very fresh. And it helped me not just to improve my technical skills, but it also helped me to understand myself better, why I do what I do when I'm in court and out of court. So that's how I met Joelle in a nutshell.
Great. And Joelle, is your story from your side of how you and Ian met, is that a similar thing? It's like how I met your mother, but the other way, how I met Ian, how I met Joelle?
Yes, it's largely the same. Yeah, so there's no two versions of this. Yeah, we met in a church setting and we were more closely connected in the last 5 years. Yeah, and ever since I started coaching Ian in badminton and also having more life coaching conversations, we got to know each other a lot deeper. Because in life coaching sessions, we go very deep into the emotions and the thought process, and that quickly reveals who we are, and it can create a lot of intimacy, even in a friendship like that.
Yeah, great. And I think definitely something that Henry and I want to dig into with regards to understanding yourself better. And Ian, also what you said, why I do the things the way I do it and how that affects learning. So that's a really interesting topic for me. So I'm sure we'll get into that a bit later. But just a question about traveling to Malaysia across the border to play badminton. So that was a common thing. And why was the reason you're doing that? Was it because sparring was there? Was it a group of friends over there or more courts?
Okay. So I have visited only one store, one badminton store since I started playing badminton when I was 11. So we have known each other for 20 years. And one of the store staff member is from Malaysia. He travels in and out every day. So one day he just said, "Hey, do you want to come over and play with my friends?" And then we said, "Sure." So then it became a regular thing for that period, at least before COVID, that we would travel in on one weekday where we'll play with his friends, right? And then along the way, I just asked Ian to join. So to answer your question, it is not normal. It is coincidental. And it's just because we have a Malaysian friend and that's why we do this.
Yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, cross-border badminton sessions on a weekday is definitely a different one. We haven't heard that one on the podcast before. But yeah, look, in terms of, yeah, definitely dedication. So well done, Ian. Good job on picking that up and taking it to the next level by traveling to Malaysia where so many good badminton players are, right? Now, Ian, we've heard about how you've gotten involved with Joelle and involved with badminton, but we don't really know how Joelle got involved with badminton yet. So I think our listeners would be interested to know, how did your badminton journey start, Joelle?
Okay. It wasn't very glamorous, but I basically picked a spot that I wouldn't really be in the sun too much. So this is one of the few spots that is a bit indoor. In Singapore, all the students in the government schools will, in the public schools will have to pick as part of the extra curriculum activity by the age of around 10 years old for me. Yeah, so that's how I started. And since around 10 or 11, I've been playing. We only got a proper coach at the middle of when I was 11 years old. Yeah, and that's how I started, right, as part of the school curriculum.
And then from there, I guess, I know you said you chose it because you were out of the sun, but obviously that's turned into something that you really, really enjoyed. So after that initial choice of you choosing it as a sport in school, where did you try to take badminton further? Did you try to train more? Or what did you use badminton for and how did you develop as a player and now a coach?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm being 11 years old, I don't think I thought that far when I was 11, but as I got better at it, I got some recognition when we won some medals. I realized that it's something that I could use as a leverage, besides the point I really enjoyed the sport. So since I think we call it primary school, secondary school and junior college over here, and every school that I changed, I actually use my sports as a leverage, right? That means by academic score, I didn't quite make it. But because I was good at badminton, they made a concession for me and they said, okay, you can come in as long as you play badminton for us. And that's how I got into all the other schools. And then I got better and better at it along the way.
Because as you continued your journey bouncing around those different schools, Joelle, was there something that badminton taught you specifically about yourself? Because earlier we talked about Ian learning why he does what he does. Along that journey, were there any sort of key moments or big influential events revolving around badminton that helped you understand yourself better?
When I was that age, I didn't make this realization. But now as a life coach, when I look back, I think there were certain pivotal moments that shaped my personality or maybe revealed my personality. So I remember one of the key moments that was very painful for me was that we were 2-2 with another school. And I was the deciding game. I was playing the deciding game. We went to rubber set and I lost. And then my friends came and like laugh at me and mock at me. Okay, maybe not laugh, but they were angry at me. And I was really, really upset. I spent the next 2 days or 3 days crying. Even in lessons, I would go to the toilet and cry. And I was just 12 years old at that time. So looking back, I think to me, part of my personality is that winning and losing really matters to me. It was part of my image or my, in a more psychological term, my ego in that sense, right? And yeah, that's part of who I am. I'm learning to embrace that and use that to my advantage, but also learning to take it lightly so that it doesn't affect me too much.
Yeah, awesome. And I guess, Ian, you haven't maybe had the history that Joel has had in the sport, like when you were growing up and you were so young playing like Joel was. But has there been anything in your badminton kind of journey, no matter how short it has been, that has also helped you realize something? Like, we're definitely going to dig into the stuff you've done with Joel and helping you understand yourself more. But was there something that happened in a badminton event or competition or even a social that gave you a good realization or, yeah, something that you found that maybe you wouldn't have found without badminton?
Yes, actually. I'm a strong believer that games are a reflection of our personalities and behaviors. In a game where everything is on the line, that's where we see our true natures or we discover our true natures. One very vivid memory that I have was actually with Joel during a training session. I always found myself in a game wearing out really quickly. I have very, or at least in my perception, very low stamina. I can't keep up a game. And I realized that Joel pointed out to me during one training session that I played very aggressively. I always put power and I always used power. And sometimes that power didn't translate in a game to a victory. And while that outcome that I wanted was victory, my means to that end was to power through all of my shots. So I did heavy smashes. I very seldom focused on my netting and some of the more finesse shots, for example. And so one time Joel pointed out to me that aggression, was that something that was a part of my life? And when I was thinking about it, I thought really long and hard and I realized that my entire life, my search for significance was predicated on winning, on success. And the only way I knew how to do it through my upbringing or through my environment was to power through and to really force through. And so Joel talked to me in life coaching. There are the four dispositions, which I'm sure he will explain. And one of those four is the warrior disposition. And it's about forward energy. It's always about if there's an obstacle in front of you, you go past, you knock through that wall. While that is effective in certain areas, some of the downsides of playing so aggressively is, one, I don't have endurance to last a full game. So even if I can make kill shots very well, I might not last a full game and I might still compromise the late game. And so he opened up the whole possibility of playing in different positions like the jester and the king queen, which play more stable or perhaps more flexible shots. And just that realization, and when I had that awareness, I shifted my gameplay to still use strength when I need to. But there are times where I know that I need to play flexible. I need to be unpredictable. Then I adopt the jester position and I play more trick shots. I do more unpredictable placement of my shots. And so that was something that was profoundly impactful for me in my game. And yeah, that was one memory that I had with badminton.
Okay, let's cut to Joel for a moment, Ian. Like, that was really cool because that's the first time that I've heard about taking these different types of positions in badminton. And I'm sure you've taken that outside of it, and we'll dig into that as well. But maybe we'll just cut to Joel. And Joel, if you could please, I guess, give us the definition of those four, like the king, queen, jester, and warrior, because that would be really cool to understand.
Okay, I'll try to explain it, bearing in mind that people cannot see the screen. But since we can see here, I'll just share it. So there are typically four different energies. Energy may sound strange, right? Or maybe even new age, but it's just a very practical way of how people's body move, right? So the warrior moves more forward and the king queen is a bit more stable and the jester is a bit more upwards and then the lover is a bit more backwards. So for a backward energy like a lover, it creates an open space in front, which is good for people to then put in or to bring themselves into conversations and share more about themselves. So typically the lover disposition is good for like mothers, counselors, life coaches, because when they lean back, which they usually do, they allow the person in front of them to share. This is also the least used disposition in sports because usually sports is about conquering forward. Okay. So the other three are more what would be used in the badminton court or in any other game. So warrior energy is typically more aggressive, right? They are a bit more laser focused and they just want to power their way through. Right, and they are more about just straight out offensive play. I think if you look at the badminton, in the history of badminton players, this is more like the Lin Dan style, right, where they are very, very strong smashers and they set up the game just so that they can kill. The king queen is about stability. So the energy is downward. One of the exercises that I'll get people to do in my training, right, when I'm doing the archetype work, I ask them to try to resist me when I push them. And they will usually resist me by pushing back, right? And if I'm stronger than them, I will be able to push them back. But even if I'm stronger than them and if they adopt that king queen energy of going downwards, it's very difficult to push someone back when they are very rooted to the ground, right? So a way for people to imagine is that imagine trying to push a rock or imagine trying to push a tree that has a very strong root towards the ground, right? So king queen is a very defensive disposition or very grounded disposition. How this translates to people's personality is that king queens are usually more observant, right? They don't move forward very fast. They observe, analyze, and then they do strategic planning. So while warrior creates results, king queens create better effectiveness and efficiency because they are very accurate. This disposition is good for, say, like accountants or people that need high level of details or high level of accuracy in their work. I would think maybe lawyers will require some level of king queen energy as well. So the last one that I haven't described is jester. Jester is the upwards energy. So they are very creative. They are very fast paced and they are all over the place, right? So these are people that will do trick shots. They will catch their opponent by surprise. At a very, very high level, there are very, very little people that master jester and use it on the international level. But one quick visual would be maybe the Indonesian doubles player, I think Kevin Sukamulyo, right? I think he is very, very fanciful. But you will see that in all of this disposition, there are certain trade-offs. So usually the jester, while they're very creative and they can catch the opponent off guard, they may not be as stable. They may not be as reliable, right? Warrior, they are very laser focused. They're very aggressive. They can create very powerful plays, but they also require a lot of energy and they also wear out a lot faster. So to match their warrior style, you must really train your stamina and power as well, right? And for the king queen energy, they can be a bit more boring to watch, right? Because they are very stable and they're very predictable. But the strength is that they seldom make mistakes, okay? So in some of my work with higher level players, we may talk about building certain range. So if someone is very, very warrior, we may talk about how we want to create a jester kind of play or king queen kind of play, right? And the interesting thing that Ian talked about is that very, very commonly, right, whatever that they show up in the court is also how they will show up in the world, in other areas of their life, right? In Ian's description, he took a very warrior approach to badminton and that reflects in his life as well. While I say that it's very common, it doesn't mean that we cannot act beyond that or it doesn't mean that other people cannot display different disposition in life, but it takes a lot of awareness work and a lot of training for them to create that range or to take other disposition that they're more inclined to take.
Awesome. I think that's an excellent insight and also segue, because rather than just traditional badminton coaching where it's, okay, hit the drop shot like this, hit the smash like this, use backhand grip, use this footwork, it is really probably the next level, right? So course technique is important, but it's the next level of seeing what kind of player you are. And yeah, like you said, the way that you play the game is also the way you play life. But before we go more deep into those things, which I'm really looking forward to, there might be some listeners out there thinking, okay, look, I know what a badminton coach is. They teach badminton, but how does life coaching and what is a life coach? Yeah. What does a life coach help with for someone who's listening?
Okay, so I will first share what a life coach does, right, who is not a badminton coach. And then I'll share how life coaching can help badminton as well. Typically, a life coach will help people to process their experience and create awareness through asking questions. So for example, right, if Ian comes to me and say that, look, I'm having trouble at work and I realize that I'm not getting along well, or I'm not producing results. So my job is then to help unpack those stories or those events and episodes. And then I bring him to a point of realization of this is how he operates. This is how he thinks. This is what goes through inside him when that happens. And that leads to how come or why does he respond in a certain way? So the idea is that for someone to choose a different response, they must first know where their reaction came from. Then they can choose a different response from that. Okay, so in a nutshell, I ask questions to create awareness so that people can take different options in their life. Okay. So because I have the expertise in going into the thinking patterns and unpacking emotions, I bring that into the court. So there are some students that I realize they approach coaching or they approach learning with a lot of resolute. Right? Resolute really usually creates some tension in their body and they can become quite tight. This is not good for certain strokes like drop shot or cross court netting, right, where they need to be a bit more relaxed. I also realized that some of them enter coaching with a lot of fear, right, which means that they wouldn't take so much risk and they are afraid of making mistakes and they don't dare to try. Right? But this is largely not because I'm competent as a badminton coach, but it's because I can sometimes see the emotions through how the body carries itself. It's just the way the eyes look, the breathing pattern, or the way the mouth shapes itself. Sometimes it represents different emotions. And I usually go into sometimes series of questions or some questions to ask, how are you feeling? What makes you feel this way? And then I can help the player manage the emotion better. I think this has been rather effective in me helping my students learn instead of the very traditional coaching approach where sometimes coaches just say, don't be afraid. Don't be scared. Just try. Then what happens to my fear? What happens to my anxiety? Do I just pack it up in a plastic bag and just put it aside? Sometimes we need to learn how to address those emotions before the student can overcome it. And that's where I bring my life coaching expertise in.
Yeah, fantastic, Joel. So let's say I was a student of yours, you know, coming in, you know, wanting some life coaching and badminton coaching. Where does it all begin? Is it, you know, you sit down with the student and you have that chat, or you go, hey, let's play some badminton first, presuming that they know some badminton, and then you kind of assess, like you said, you've assessed their physical motions to kind of identify how they operate? Or does it sort of start in like an overall just general conversation? And where I think in the introduction, we also mentioned like some of the life learning tools, including what is called the 12 archetypes. And then like, do you start to build almost like an understanding or a profile of these players, and then you take it to the court? How does it work in that sense?
Yeah, I think I made it a point in all my business to come into an agreement or contracting first before we even begin work. So whether you're a life coaching client or whether you're a badminton client, I first have a conversation to know what's the goal about. So there are two main profiles of badminton players. Some, they want to create results. Some, they just want to experience or explore a different sport. And with these two different goals, then the process is very different. Even when I go into different subgroups from these two main groups, there are some that just wants to do the technical badminton coaching. But some of them want more than that, you know, like Ian himself. He would see that value in how unpacking what happens in the court and how does it parallel to life. I will say that not everyone is ready for this as well. Some people may feel very vulnerable or may feel a bit, they may find intrusive to have me make these observations or review themselves. So I usually have a conversation to come into contract. What is expected of the coaching conversation before we proceed?
Now, just a quick word from our sponsors.
The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Volant. Volant was first born out of our frustration with the confusing, bright, and unsightly clothes and equipment that we saw in the badminton world. But now, it's so much more than that. Our mission is to accelerate the growth of badminton by providing players with products that enhance their love for the sport. All in all, it's high quality gear that makes you look and feel great on and off the court. So make sure you check us out at volantbadminton.com and follow us on our socials at volantbadminton.
And then just to go back on those 12 archetypes, what are these archetypes? And yeah, how does that affect the way that you approach your coaching with these players?
I use the term 12 archetypes because that's originally researched and put out there by Carl Jung. And this archetype, in his context, right, it was more like a personality or profiling tool. And there are plenty out there, right? Like Enneagram, StrengthsFinder, Big Five, or MBTI. And this is another one of that. What I learned in my field, right, is value, giving another layer of that archetype, right, is seeing how the body brings or appears in this world. So, you know, just now when I shared about the jester, warrior, and the king, queen, lover, in Carl Jung's personality profile, they do not share so much about how the body appears, but they just talk about what this personality does, what they are prone to do, and what do they not like to do. But because I can see in the body and how it maps or translates into that, I can quickly draw that link between what happens in the court and their personality. So how I bring it in, there are two ways, generally two ways. The first way is I review the pattern and then I ask them a question on whether they want to grow range or they want to grow deeper into that, right? So you growing range will create a very even balanced player. But not every coach wants to do that and not every player wants to do that. Some player just wants to be very offensive or some player just wants to play very strategically or very defensively, right? And a typical coach may train a student according to their version of what's a good player. But my approach is generally helping the student to create the results that they want. So given my ability to spot these different archetypes and the different personalities, I go into conversation of whether they want to create range or grow deeper in that. And the other general approach that I have is that sometimes they may not be very certain on what they want to do, whether is it to grow range or to be more specific in their strength. Sometimes it's about exploration first, where we will try the different disposition and we'll see what benefits them. We may also find sparring opportunities for them to play with different disposition. Or if we can't create those opportunities, we can ask them to watch certain games on YouTube. And the question then goes back to them on what they want to develop as a player for themselves.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting. I'd like to just ask Ian now, because being a student of yours in the coaching, life coaching and badminton coaching, how did you find kind of this process? Like, are you aware of your archetype? Is that when you said at the start about understanding why you do what you do, was that related to this also? And what's your experience been with this?
I think playing badminton offensively, or I always enjoyed playing offensively. I think subconsciously it's been ingrained into me. What I didn't quite understand about myself then was the limitations that I had as an offensive player. Having that awareness that Joel mentioned earlier, I had a chance to experience playing a different type of game. And so when I learned about different dispositions or different Enneagram types, I knew what were my motivations. I knew what were some of the fears that I might be facing. What are some of the pressures that I put on myself as a warrior or as an achiever that I needed to achieve, that losing was not an option. And that gave me the option to choose whether to hold on to it or to let go of it completely and play a different style of game. And this was particularly helpful because if I'm always playing offensive and I sometimes play with people who are very different players or very different individuals and we play a doubles game, that often brings a lot of anger, a lot of anguish into the game. And when I lose, it's not the best feeling. But sometimes having that option to let go of my disposition or to let go of what I'm clinging onto or the baggage that I come with gave me a lightness, because sometimes it's just about having fun or sometimes it's just about exploring different play styles. And so it was a chance for me to explore not being fixated on one sort of play, but to play, you know, completely different styles. And I think one of the benefits that came out of it for me that I've been realizing in my games was that sometimes, and I think we all face it, sometimes when we have a tendency to play certain shots, then your opponent becomes, you know, they prepare for it or they stand in front of the net and they wait for you to deliver that shot, because that's what you always do. You're predictable to an extent. So having that range of play helped me to develop a variance in the style that I approach a game. And sometimes catching people off guard also leads to a win. And so that still fulfills what I value in the game and outside of the game. One other thing was that seeing that parallel between how I function in the game and out of the game, I thought it was, I know it sounds cliche, but it was a life-changing moment for me to come to terms with myself. And I have to say that it wasn't a very easy journey. One of the things, going back to how I met Joel, was I think our friendship only deepened in that second half of the decade, because when these things surfaced, Joel asked me, he created a very safe space, a very safe container for me to share. And I, as I began to share and I began to recollect on my life experiences, I began to become very vulnerable. And it was only in that state of vulnerability was I able to unpack some of the past hurts that I faced as a child growing up. And that influenced how I function as an adult today. And addressing some of those past hurts, whether it's letting it go, whether it's addressing it, that gave me a lot of lightness. It caused me to not have to carry that baggage to me wherever I go. We all know of people in our lives who carry a certain anger or a certain emotion with them, and it seems part of their life almost. And I think going through that life coaching through badminton, it helped me to let go some of these things, to deal with my own inner demons almost. But I think it's caused me to generally be a lot happier in my life. And so I think that really propelled me to not just want to be a learner in a coaching program with Joel, but I think that was one of the reasons why I later joined him as a member of his team and support him on his goal. Because I think seeing the results for myself and experiencing that for myself, I know that that's value to other people as well. And I know that, you know, I can't be the only one out there that feels the same way. And if it brought such value to my life, and if Joel's passion is on bringing that awareness to people and to learners around Singapore, especially with youth, who I think today face a very different set of challenges. And coming from a country like Singapore, something like mental wellness, mental health is not something that is taken as seriously as we do in the Western part of the world. So I think having that opportunity to look within ourselves, not just at our results or what we can do, who we are as people, and to understand what we are motivated by, what we are fearful for, you know, I think that was an opportunity that I was very happy to be a part of later.
Can I just share something about Ian? Just 3 minutes, okay? Right, not too long, but I think he doesn't sell himself short over there. So I think Ian's, and I'll review a bit about yourself here, okay? Which I think is safe. So I think from his childhood experience, right, one of his coping mechanisms, right, is to show that he has that competence. And the image that he tries to show is that I can do it. So that's a little bit of the warrior disposition as well. And it showed up in the court and it showed up in his life. So when we had conversations around unpacking where this hurt came from, he was more able to heal from it, drop it, and then make a choice from other disposition as well. So I don't know whether Ian knows this, right? But I have received comments that over the last maybe just 2 years or 3 years, these comments that I've been receiving, that Ian looks more vulnerable. Ian looks more real and more authentic. And he doesn't look like he has to put up that front so much anymore. And Ian, these are comments from Guang Han and Yvonne, my wife, and my leader in church.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just one thing to add on that, since you brought it up, and I recalled that. I think I came to Joel once a couple of years ago, and I think it was one of the valleys that I was facing in my life when I felt very tired of wearing an image. I think Joel used to remember that. And I came to him with that trouble because I feel very tired of always having to feel like I have to show that competent side of me. You know, I have to be successful in business, I have to be successful in my relationships. But after he unpacked it for me, I felt that I can actually be myself and be in touch with that authentic self, that I'm not just my image, as much as in certain arenas I have to show up very polished, but there are times in a safe space, like with friends and family, that I can put on an image and put on my authentic self.
I'm not sure, Joel, you're going to get a better testimonial than that, to be honest. I think we should just wrap up here. I'm kidding. I don't know. Was that planned? That was a really good testimonial, Ian. It sounds like you've learned so much about yourself throughout the process that has helped, you know, with all parts of your life, not just on the court, by developing just such a strong understanding of your own way of operating in life and your being able to choose between how you've typically responded to certain situations and to be able to change that up and develop your range, not just yet on the court and in the working environment as well. I know Jeff loves this area, so I'm going to pass to Jeff because I'm sure he has a ton of questions for you.
Yeah, so I've got a few questions actually. It is related to coaching because I'm involved in coaching as well. And Joel, you were talking about when you first talk to players, you have the two kind of categories. There's subcategories, but there's two. That one is kind of like, oh, they just want to experience badminton, enjoy themselves maybe more. Whereas the other one is more about maybe achieving results. Of course, the background that I come from is very much high performance, where winning is the answer, unfortunately. Not fortunately, winning is great. I love winning. Winning is the best thing in the world, but also losing is sometimes the worst thing in the world because of that. But where do you start to draw the line between, I guess, that need to win and to play at the highest levels, to be the best in the world or whatever that might be, the best in your country? Where does that kind of get into that more serious territory of, hey, this is a sport that, yes, you love to play, but you're here for results, 100% results? Like, how much room is there for these questions? How much room is there for this kind of development of the person when quite a lot of the time, especially in Asian culture, especially in Asian coaching, it's usually just do this. I know what's better for you, that kind of thing. Definitely in Europe, there's a lot more back and forth, but especially in Asia, especially like the typical older Chinese coach, they'll just tell you to do 100 jump smashes and that's it. And that's the way you have to do it. Otherwise, it's my way or the highway. So in terms of that question I'm trying to ask is, like, how does that fit into the role of high performance, where the pressure is really on to create results and you're playing literally against the world's best?
Okay. I want to ask Jeff a question also, right? In your years of coaching, right, have you met players that look like they are underperforming, where you think that they should be doing very well, right, based on their maybe athletic abilities or, you know, in other areas, but somehow they're just not creating the results? Have you met such players?
Yep, definitely.
Okay, so that's one. Have you also met players that really, really good, right, but for some reason they're very hesitant or very fearful, or maybe the opposite, right, where they're such high risk takers, right, that they're so unstable and volatile?
Yep, I think every kind of category of player I've come across, definitely.
Yeah. And I think this has much to do with the person's intrapersonal being. The coaches can see what happens in the court. Most coaches can do that. And they can comment on maybe the form of the body or the techniques of the stroke, right? But what coaches may not be very able to do is to deal with what happens inside the mind. What happens? Why do they choose certain risky behavior or safe behavior? Why do they underperform? And that's where I come in. To give a summarized answer, life coaching and performance, high-level performance badminton coaching is not exclusive, right? In other disciplines, they as in a high-performance athlete, actually see maybe sports psychologists to deal with this. And that is in a similar, but it's also a little bit different realm that I deal with. And so I feel that they shouldn't be separated. They shouldn't be seen as competing. If I have a full day's schedule, there should be some time allocated for that physical training, but this is also very much the mental and the emotional training that each athlete should go into so that they can unlock their potential and really perform at the level that they should be performing at.
Yep. I think definitely it has its place, but yeah, I guess everyone knows how important it is to have your well-being looked after and that your emotions looked after, because it's going to help you train and play better. But I think sometimes it gets difficult in those settings where the result is so much that matters that the result is focused on the most. So that kind of leads on to the other question I have, which is kind of like the difference between coaching and consulting. And that this is a question that I kind of battle and I deal with a lot in work, being a dental practice coach / consultant, because we do form those roles. And for the listeners out there, the definition that I'm aware of that I've been made aware of and that I've researched is that coaching is definitely more about what you're saying, Joelle, more asking the questions for self-realization, asking the right questions so that the person who is answering them comes with the answers themselves, because people will often do what they tell themselves to do more than what someone else tells them to do. And then consulting is more, hey, I know better, not better, but I've got maybe the advice and I'm going to give you the advice. And in my line of work, there's definitely times for both. There's 100% times where you need to coach and you need to get more deep into it. But there's also times where we need, yes, we can go through the feelings. Yes, we can go through those things, but we need an actionable, implementable thing. And that's where the consulting comes in, because as the authority or as the guiding figure, like a coach, then you would probably have more technical expertise or badminton expertise than them. So then you would consult or you'd tell them more what to do in those situations. How do you feel that interaction is between coaching and consulting for you?
To be honest, I think you answered it quite well. It just so happens that it's in the same deck of slides that I have right over here. But I want to qualify a few things before I begin. And I think you have brought that up. I want to highlight there is a place and time for each profession, each expertise. There's a time for therapists, psychologists, consultants, trainers, teachers, and also coach. I don't think coaching is the only or the best way to deal with these things, right? But it is one of the ways, especially when you feel stuck. All right, so psychologists and psychiatrists usually deal with mental health cases, things that are they may diagnose are like people with depression, suicidal tendencies, schizophrenia, and other, now there are so many more. Therapies may work in the same realm, but they also do more in terms of healing. They go a little bit more into the past, and in my own words, right, not a professional definition, but they kind of make things right, right? Whatever that was done wrong for them. And I would say that in this diagram that I do, most of the things that these professions do, they overlap each other, right? There are definitely areas that a coach is similar to a psychologist or a therapist or a psychiatrist, and likewise for the other. We do have our specific differences as well. One of the key differences, the one that you point out, where if I go to a consultant with a question, I expect an answer. But you go to a coach with a question, the coach may ask you even more questions and they may help you to come into realization of what works for you. I will add that for a coach, we don't only ask questions, but we co-create solutions. Why we believe in this is that if I give you a solution to how I would deal with the situation that fits my personality and my circumstances and my upbringing, I already have it in my body and my personality to take on that solution, but it may not be the same for you. So when we co-create a solution, we put a ball back into the client's court, right? And we ask, how would you create this result? How would you usually deal with this? And what would work for you? And what doesn't work for you? And again, it's just by asking questions so that we can shape and create that solution together.
Yeah, and I think that that's also where the terminology that we're using, Joelle, I think technically we should be called badminton consultants, because right. A lot of the time a student will come to you and say, hey, fix my backhand. How do I do this? How do I play this? What's the tactics for this game? How do I train like this better? And it's more about you just telling them what to do based on your expertise or your past experience, when actually we should be asking the questions back. And quite often I get weird looking faces when I do ask the question back, when I ask, okay, what do you think? This is like you said, well, this is the end goal. You want to be better at this. What do you think about that? What do you think you should do? And I get met with the funniest questions and blank faces most of the time. So I think that's an interesting terminology. Joel, I have one more question, and I'll let Henry chime in because I've hogged the questions for a bit. But the last one revolves around yourself, Joel. I guess with your personality, obviously you love to help people. Obviously you love to get deeper with the people that you work with and help them have realizations. But do you sometimes feel like you have like fatigue from giving or fatigue from listening? Because I'll just completely absolutely honest with you, sometimes I really do, and I just need to tune everyone out because it can be quite tiring, I feel, to be always giving, always being that sounding board, always being the one to help people out of this. And do you get fatigued from that at all? And how do you manage that if you do?
That's a good question. I think I will first point that many people in my line or in social work or psychologies, they do face such issue. I personally find that one of the reasons is because they do take on the responsibility, or they have maybe a lot of empathy for their client. So whatever emotions that they see, they resonate and they feel it inside themselves as well. So that's where I'm a little bit different, where for me, my empathy is a learned thing, right? It doesn't happen naturally for me. Before I took on coaching, right, I think no one would have ever imagined that I would take on life coaching as a profession, right? But what I'm trying to say here is that for me, it was slightly easier for me to be able to, at the end of the conversation, realize that it's the end, and I can shake it off a bit easier than others,
right? But there are also times that I take on a lot. And to be frank, there are many times that I do feel very responsible or empathetic towards my client. And that's where I see my own life coach, or that's where I talk to my wife about it so that I let it out. Some people don't realize the power of just talking about it, right? Because they keep it inside and then it festers and then sometimes it grows. But just by letting it out, just by coming into contact with the emotions, we allow the emotion to happen and the emotion can better go away. So this is something that people don't realize is really powerful, which is just talking about it to someone and letting it out.
Joel, I want to go back and circle back to one something that you said earlier, actually, before we finish up with our last question for Ian. And that was when you talked about crying for 2 to 3 days when you were 12 years old. I want to know, like, did that stem this pathway for you? Like, was that the ignition or the spark that sort of lighted this pathway for you, like that particular experience? Or did it have any impact on, your choice in life to become a coach?
I will qualify that I'm still learning more and more about myself as I see my life coach, right? And I'm also in a journey of discovering. At that point, you have 11 years old, or from what I understand is that we would have likely formed our foundation, right? In terms of our personality, right? Or where trauma has happened before even 7 years old. So if I were to phrase it correctly, right? I think that experience when I was 12 years old didn't make me who I am, but revealed who I am. So it's slightly different, right? It didn't shape me, but it revealed and showed me that winning and losing really matters to me. To me, that is where I attach most of my worth in. One statement that I may have hang on to for a very long time is that if I am not good or if I don't produce results, I cannot be loved. I don't deserve to be loved. I think that reflects in my personality where I'm a little bit obsessive. When I do something, I really go all out and I just give it my all. It's almost like a do or die thing. It also reflects in my spending where I'll buy a lot of rackets and stuff. Yeah, so coming back to your question, whether that has shaped me to be a coach, I am more inclined to believe that that revealed who I am. And the rest of my life is just different areas where it has manifested this way as well, where I really go deep into it, really practice it, and really try to improve and grow so that I can kind of show my worth. Because that's where I come from.
Yeah, look, I appreciate the transparency and the vulnerability that you've shared and you've both shared in this podcast episode so far. I know I'm kind of jumping from one topic to another, but I want to finish with you, Ian, and kind of focus a bit on MTAS as well, because of course we've spoken around MTAS and what MTAS offers. But earlier we did mention, Ian, that you were brought on to help MTAS's digital efforts. Could you share with us, I guess, some more details on what, you know, you're hoping to achieve?
Yeah, sure.
So I think that all started, I think for a while now, Joel has wanted to enter into content creation. I think where we are today, coming out of COVID, I think content creation has played a very big part of our daily lives. And so one day, I think that manifested in me joining his team, because I come from a marketing background. And I think we spend enough time working together that I can support him in some of these activities. I think being in the business itself, because he wears many hats, many identities. He is a badminton coach on the courts. But he's also the one formulating the programs. He's the one giving feedback to students and to parents, engaging them. And that leaves very little time for him to develop the content that he wants to put out on social media. And so I think one of his plans was to start a YouTube channel, and he has done that in the past. So just coming in is to support him to make that come to life. And so I think he has always had MTAS YouTube channel, although it wasn't formally known as MTAS. So we gave it a brand, we gave it a facelift, and we, you know, I think COVID in a way, I don't want to use the word force, but it definitely did have a part to play in bringing about digital transformation. And so I think my role is to come in to help me with some of these activities that, you know, to spread the load and to, you know, I think just a journey together, because I think coming from an e-commerce startup background, I can resonate with how lonely sometimes it can feel as a solo founder.
And so I think coming in to support him has been on my heart. And I think seeing the passion that he comes from, I think that this is a cause. It's almost like a cause. I see it as a cause. And I want to help him to realize that dream and to see it come into fruition for other people as well. So yeah, that's where I come in.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So we are starting to wrap up here. So I might ask Ian and Joel. So Ian, if someone wants to get in contact or buy any of the Kurian organic stuff, how can they find you or find the product? And then I'll ask Joel the same thing for More Than a Swing or MTAS, how they can get in touch, especially if they're in Singapore, they want to learn badminton. How can they get in touch or basically reach out?
Yeah, for sure. I'll go first. We are based in sunny Queensland. And so you can find us online at kurianorganics.com. You can find us easily with a search. And yeah, that's primarily where we retail our products.
And how about you, Joel?
Okay, so for my badminton services, you can find me on morethanaswing.sg. And for my life coaching services, you can contact me at upraise.sg. All right, but I'm behind both emails, both websites. So actually, if you can't differentiate any between the two, you can just drop me an email on any of those websites.
Or both of them.
Yes.
Yeah, or both of them. Okay, so for listeners out there, that's how you get in contact with Ian and Joel. And yes, from Jeff and I and the Badminton Podcast and all the listeners that I hope have enjoyed this insightful conversation, thank you so much to the both of you for coming on to this episode.
No, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Henry and Jeff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think thanks should go to you. And yeah, I think the work both of you do is extremely important. And yeah, I think jumping onto the podcast was an opportunity. So thank you guys for allowing us some time on your program.
Thank you, guys. I've got one more question for all the listeners. Are you a jester, a king, queen, a lover, or a warrior? You can answer us. You can let us know. You can get in contact with us easily. Just see the podcast description. You'll have all the details there. And we'll see everyone on the next episode. Bye.
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 So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at the Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at the Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.